Hey, welcome to the Happy Ramp Podcast. I am Ted Kluck, joined as always in studio by Barnabas Piper and Ronald J. Martin. Boys, we have two very depressing things to talk about and one nice thing. But before we get into that, we've got some very exciting things to promo. Not the least of which is Indie Live. Indie Live is a live show concept. It's a night of entertainment. We have done this two times before. We've done it in the city of Louisville, and we are expanding because we want to dominate the Midwest. Our view is if we dominate the middle of the country, then we can just kind of spread our influence outward, like the prayer of Jabez, boys. Our borders are expanding. And we are expanding north into Indianapolis. We are
just pray your Indie Live prayer every 30 days.
That's it,
or every day for 30 days, and you too will have great podcast success.
And remember, people, that we are the main event in Indianapolis that weekend. There is something else going on. There's another allegedly like a Christian event going on, but Indie Live is the main event. It's March 31st. It is at a ambiguously named hipster church called, what's the name of it? Soma. Am I getting that right, Ron?
Soma Church, that's
which
right.
Which could be the name of a flavored water, or a mattress, or a bar. In this case, it is the name of a church. Ron, is that Greek for anything? Is Soma Greek for, like, the gathering, or is there any, like, deeper hipster meaning to that name?
Yeah, but I have no idea what it is.
Okay. Well, there...
Is it something that is worthy of like getting tattooed on my left shoulder blade?
Say? Yeah, for sure. I mean, if that's your thing, okay, then you would want to do that. But I don't have my Greek lexicon with me, so I don't know what it means.
Piper, could we get
your tattoo lexicon?
Could we get the tattoos on stage as well? We're going to be shaving on stage, as we discussed in last week's episode. Shaving, tattooing, things of all kinds happening on the stage. Piper, why don't you walk them through the Eventbrite page and just talk about some business items related to the event?
Yes. So the easiest way to find out details, if you go to happyrantpodcast.com, we have a big section that says events, and there's a big orange button on that that says order your Indie Live tickets. That's the place to go. Then we have a whole Eventbrite page set up. So if you just go to happyrantpodcast.com, go to the events section, it's right there. So it's March 31st. It'll start at 7 p.m. And that's Indianapolis is Eastern time. But I always get confused because Indiana doesn't do daylight savings, or part of the state doesn't. But anyway, 7 o'clock Eastern time. But the offer is for the first 25. There's a coupon code that can be used 25 times. So the first 25 people to use it. It is the code EARLYRANT. Mm. That's one word. Early rant. So if you use that, you will save $5 off your ticket. They're $15 normally, so a $10 ticket price instead. First 25 people to use that. So if you use it and it says too bad, so sad, that just means we already have 25 people who love us. And you can be the 26th and pay $15. So early rant, save $5 on your ticket. I would jump on that pretty quick because tickets do tend to sell pretty fast. I think we had about 160 or 170 people at the last event in Louisville. I would love to have that many people or more come out for this one, so jump on it. HappyRantPodcast.com, go to the events part, hit the big orange button, use the code EARLYRANT, save your $5, jump on it quick because it's only good for the first 25 people to do it. So,
and bring us stuff, go get them. Bring us swag, as we've become accustomed to in the past, man. It's just a really nice moment to show up to your own live event, and in addition to having all those people in the room.
Let's recap some of the swag that we've gotten at previous events, just to kind of
prime the pump,
get the gears turning for people. Right. So event number one, Ted got nothing.
Yes, that's right. That's an easy one for me to remember.
But event number two, event number two though, the attendees more than made up for that by bringing Ted. I feel like you got khaki pants.
Dude, I got khaki pants. I got a pie that was delicious that I ate half of on stage.
Yeah, it was like a peanut butter pie. It was really good. I got a bite or two.
Dude, somebody baked me a loaf of bread, which was unbelievable. So, you know, tip of the cap to that person. I got all kinds of, like, football-related swag, which is my love language. Like, if you want to...
Yeah, did somebody... Was there, like, a high school football jersey involved?
Dude, it was some guy's, like college football uniform. Jersey pants, the whole deal. I got a vintage Priest Holmes Chiefs jersey, which was great.
Yes, That was
yeah. So all kinds of football swag. Which if you want to make Big T happy, that's definitely the wheelhouse. But yeah, I feel like it.
I think Ronnie got a box of tea at one of them.
Yeah,
correct?
Youthberry.
Yeah, I got like a major, like one of those major over the top, like gift box, examples of like Youthberry tea.
Yeah, so it wasn't like a box of tea bags. It was like a wooden box that, you know, a beautiful fold up lid with like an array of things to make your place smell wonderful.
And yeah, it was legit. I got it right. I'm still using it. It's awesome.
Nice, baby. Nice.
And then I got an Edgar Martinez bobblehead at one of them recently.
New Hall of Famer.
The Hall of
That's
Fame.
Right.
So
That's right.
Congratulations to Edgar and to me for getting the bobblehead. Mm-hmm. I feel like there may have been a couple books involved.
Yep.
I think there may have been baked goods and or chocolate at one point. This is just to help listeners know the kinds of things that we appreciate.
That's right.
Except for the khaki pants, we don't appreciate.
Dude, I'm gonna put a request out there on behalf of the whole program. Right. I hope you boys are okay with it. I want Kent Tekulve stuff. Kent Tekulve, famous sidearm pitcher from the Pittsburgh Pirates in the 70s and 80s. He is famous
in your heart, if
famous
not
in the hearts of this program for sure. We're all huge Kent Tekulve fans on the Happy Rant. Also, the Penguin Ron Say, famous Los Angeles Dodger and later Chicago Cubs. So, if you've got any Kent Tekulve stuff or the Penguin Ron Say stuff, we would be very excited and happy to get that. So, boys, it's just going to be fun to be in the same room together again. I feel like those live shows, they always have great energy. People ask great questions, so it'll be the same format, two kind of standard episodes, and then we'll do a Q&A up to close the night at the end. I can tell you that my parents will be in the room, so that's going to be that's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to have the original Big T in the room.
Do we have to how much do we have to behave ourselves with parents in the room?
Not
like
at all.
If my dad was in the room, I couldn't even do the show.
Yeah,
so
no.
I don't know what your parents.
I think
are
it's
like.
Going to be okay. I think we can feel free to do all our usual stuff. So
okay.
So they know the drill, man. My dad's a listener. He's a diehard listener to the show. So,
baby, if we mention the Rapture, will that get him all like pumped?
Dude, no, man. Yeah, I think they've come around to like the reformed view of the Rapture. So,
no kidding.
Yeah, I don't think there's gonna really be any controversy there. But
which is to say that there isn't. One,
yeah, exactly.
To clarify.
Exactly.
That's the reformed view of
which
the
is
Rapture.
To be smug and dismissive of the whole thing. So.
That's right. We poo-poo all other viewpoints.
Yeah.
That's how
smug dismissiveness. That's our wheelhouse as reformed men, as we've discussed ad nauseum on this program. But boys, I have one more thing to promote. I made a big high-level business deal here in the Jackson, Tennessee area. I hope you guys didn't mind me dealing on behalf of the company. But I got together with one Heck Lagares, and when Hector and I get together, there's synergy. That's the only word for it. That's a business term. And what it means is two really business-minded moguls working together. And what Hector and I came up with was a special promo code for the Union University community. So if you go to LagaresRoasters.com, if you're a Union student, faculty member, staff member, you can enter UNION15 at checkout to get 15% off your next bag of Happy Rant Signature Blend. Now, here's the thing, boys. We don't necessarily know at Lagaris/Happy Rant Corporate if you go to Union. So it's kind of the honor system. You can think of yourself as an honorary Union student for the next week or so as you purchase your Lagaris Roasters coffee. So make sure you run and don't walk to LagarisRoasters.com and get yourself a bag of the best coffee.
Yeah, I think Ron and I would like to think of ourselves as honorary Union faculty.
Sure.
Because
Absolutely.
we were more or less guest lecturers for your podcast.
Yeah.
Class,
you guys basically have tenure at
this
point. Like you're in the tenure and promotion process at Union. So you're ready to take a sabbatical. Ron could take another sabbatical as a professor. So he could get another one in if he plays this right.
Yeah, I'm already coming around to that as a professor.
Good, baby. Good. Sabbatical. You need a sabbat, man. You got to get out. Got to recharge those batteries.
Oh man, absolutely.
No, it's good, man. Absolutely. It's very good. But boys, we've got some kind of tough stuff to talk about today on the program. We're going to skew a little bit more glum and depressing than we normally do here on the Happy Rant. So we'll get a little serious, and then our last topic is a book that. That Piper and I love and Ron doesn't. So we'll get into that discussion at the end. But boys, I want to talk about a big news item, a big current event that just happened. The New York State Senate, of course, passed a bill permitting abortions right up to birth, which you know, there's really no way to talk about this other than, you know, for us, I think for guys of the pro-life persuasion, just to say that it's sad and heartbreaking, and it feels like a blow culturally. You know, I don't know that there's a lot more insight and wisdom that I could speak into the topic other than to say that I'm just really sad about it. I mean, the Bible thankfully like gives us a lot of examples of lament and what lament looks like for individuals and for groups of people. So I don't know, Ron,
completely seriously, yeah. It also gives us examples of like praying for judgment.
Yeah, most definitely.
Because
most definitely.
The thing that hit me about that most, like, it's not surprising, sadly, for a state legislature to pass that kind of bill. Mm-hmm. I mean, that doesn't surprise me at all. What does surprise me is the way it was celebrated as if this was like a liberation day for people. I mean, it was like applause and cheering in the Senate House or whatever it's called there.
Yeah.
That was the thing that made me just, I was like, oh, lightning strike right now would be just.
Yeah, to me, it was
in fact, it might be too kind.
Yeah, just a come Lord Jesus moment. Like, this is just ugly depravity happening. And, I don't know what more to say about it. Ron, you're a man of the cloth, and I imagine there are people in your congregation who, you know, may ask you about it or have asked you about it. Like, how do you speak to something like this as a, you know, as a, the leader of a flock?
Oh man. Yeah. I mean, that's a good question, Big T. Mm-hmm. I have not had any convos with anybody about it. You know, generally our people are going to be, you know, pretty conservative about these types of things. I think from our standpoint though, and even, thinking about it congregationally and thinking about it in terms of, our belief system, and there's also something even to the side of that. There's like a logic that goes into this that always just baffles me. And I know that sin deceives and sin blinds people. Mm-hmm. And, but this idea that, you know, man, we can talk around this thing, and even when you talk to people that are for the Reproductive Health Act, and mm-hmm. and you know, we have all these arguments, and we bring in biblical reasoning and you know, conviction and all of those types of things. But I always feel like, man, even like scientifically, and even from like a just the standpoint of like just in terms of human rights and those types of things, this thing always just hits me as lacking so much logic on one side and so much reasoning when you actually look at what's really going on and why. I mean, it's a barbaric opinion on one hand, mm-hmm. and then at the same time, man, you're trying to understand, at least I am, I'm trying to think of what would motivate somebody to not just ignorantly like hold to that particularly to that particular view, but to have like researched it in a way that they have a lot of like good knowledge and good information about what it actually is, and mm-hmm. still feel like this is the healthiest, this is, you know, the most productive way for society to move in terms of, you know, where we're at, you know, religiously or culturally and all these different ways. And so there's just this lack of reason and logic that goes into it that I'm just like, just baffles me. You know, you could kind of compare it with all of these other things too, that like, you know, if you use that same sense of logic in all of these other areas, you know, you wouldn't end up in that particular place. So it shocks me that abortion in general has led people to this particular position that to me, even if you just stand back, just goes, well, that just doesn't make any sense on mm-hmm. a bunch of different levels. And you know, and I can keep Christianity out of it too, if I want.
Right? Yeah. If you use the same logic for people on like, if a dog is going to have an unwanted litter of puppies, so let's abort them.
Yeah.
The same people who rabidly defend abortion and who are cheering for this legal decision would want to strangle you.
Yeah.
They would probably threaten to strangle you. They would lay out all of these arguments about, you know, those are innocent puppies. They have a right to be adopted. There are good homes out there for them. At which point you just kind of have to step back and go, And the same is true for human babies.
Yeah definitely.
Except somehow this like demonic understanding of that, like there's just a demonic break between the logic and like the right to life.
Yeah.
It's just insane. And they would defend the right of kittens and puppies in a way that they wouldn't defend the right of a human baby.
Yeah, no, I know.
It's baffling.
It's totally baffling. And, you know, for me as the parent of two adopted boys, you know, when I really reflect on stuff like this, I just literally thank God that, you know, their birth mothers didn't abort them, you know, and that they were given that kind of shot and that God and his providence led them to us. I mean, it's just a staggering thing. And, this feels like, a huge step backward. Now I'll ask you guys, because you're more, kind of conversant in this world than I am. Like what are reformed leaders saying about this? Like, has this been an occasion for, you know, those kind of responses? Has there been anything like insightful out of our camp about it?
I mean, it's been consistent across the board. Just, I mean, you used the term lament earlier, a heavy tone of that. Not nearly the think piecey responses that we, our crowd, is often prone to. It's been much more just, this is so blatantly evil.
Yeah.
And just sort of the weight of it has really landed on people because of both the decision itself. Mm-hmm. And I mean, if you look into the legalities of it, they've made it so that they've opened up abortion to not just medically trained doctors. Mm. It's sort of opened the door for like unlicensed medical practices and late term and finishing an incomplete abortion is what I understand to be in there, which basically means killing a baby who you didn't kill the first time. Mm. I mean, there's just the layers of disgustingness in that run so deep. And the responses have been almost entirely, at least the ones that I've seen, in that vein, along with a few that seek to sort of dig into and clarify what does this bill actually legalize, which was one of the most interesting things to me, because one of the responses I've seen was sort of the uprise of like, see, this is why we need to overthrow Roe versus Wade. Mm. Except even if that's overthrown, my understanding from what I've read is that it just reverts the right of these decisions to the states. Mm-hmm. So New York's decision still stands. It's just not a federally supported decision anymore.
Yeah.
So the states just have a right to be, you know, patently evil in their own way.
Sure. Yeah. Boys, let's stay in this political space a little bit. Another, you know, hugely divisive moment was this March for Life deal, which really broke, as so many things break, via like video, you know, video that gets leaked of a thing happening. And there was a group of students from a Catholic school in Kentucky, a Native American protest group, another couple of protest groups there at the mall in Washington, D.C. And it escalated and people are, you know, kind of being vilified on both sides of this thing. And I'll tell you, you know, I tend to veer away from news like that just as a kind of knee-jerk reaction. I think self-preservation, not wanting to get too glum. But I watched a video on it because I knew we were going to be talking about it today. And the video happened to feature the Native American guy and also the kid sort of speaking about it after the fact. So the kid in the Make America Great hat again, and then the guy who was beating the drum. And they both seemed incredibly kind of quiet and thoughtful and reasonable and articulate when they weren't in this like supercharged protest moment. And it, just as a student of communication, I thought, gosh, what a good thing that we're able to get this kind of thoughtful response after the fact. But what a kind of teachable moment in journalism about how a story is framed, because if you're to freeze that video at any variety of a number of moments, like you get a different reaction. So the images that we're seeing from this elicit different reactions based on like, you know, how they're framed and, you know, what image you grab from it. So, I'm curious. I tend to be personally just kind of disdainful of any kind of march. You know, I know people who went to the March for Life thing, and I have students who go, and I'm like, God bless you. Be safe. You know, not my thing. Not a thing that I would ever really go to one way or the other, I don't think. But, yeah, I'm just curious as to what you guys think about, you know, marches, protests in general, and this one in specific. Piper, what are your thoughts on this matter?
Well, first, one really important thing is that the Native American guys who were there, so it's a small group, were there for the Indigenous Peoples March, which happened to be on the same day. Mm-hmm. So they weren't part of the March for Life. They were just an adjacent group celebrating culture and history of I'm sure also protesting certain injustices there, but I mean, it was there for a different march. I'm not a fan of marches myself. They feel a little bit like boycotts to me. Like, I just feel like there's probably a better way to go about expressing things. Yeah. That said, I think they can be very effective if they're fresh and new. So like, for example, the women's march that happened, it started a couple years ago. When that happened the first time, that was sort of a cultural phenomenon, and it left an impression of, I mean, it both happened at about the same time and then helped support the Me Too movement. Mm-hmm. And like that's a momentum driver. Yeah. But the thing is, if they keep doing that every year, it just won't be a momentum driver. It'll just be a thing that happens. I think the March for Life is a little bit like that, especially with the politicization. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's a word, of the right to life and the confusion over what that even means, because a huge number of people who were there are only there to support the rights of the unborn, and they care very little about the rights of any other person, yeah, really, any other at-risk group. That's a problem, because if you are pro-life, like, you should be pro the whole duration of life, I think.
Yeah.
So there's confusion about what the message is. There's the politics aspect. I mean, that is a largely Republican march.
Yep.
Just by nature of the parties, and that feels gross to me. Not that it's Republicans, but that something that matters ethically and morally has been co-opted into politics.
Sure.
That's the gross part. So yeah, I wouldn't be inclined to participate. But I do think that there is value in not letting the issue of the lives of the unborn just kind of fall off the radar screen.
Yeah, for sure. Big R, your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I can really improve on what Pipe said at all. I think that the last point that he made about just giving a voice to the lives of the unborn, but to life in general, you know, everything that encompasses, you know, life, mm-hmm, you know, as we know it, as we believe it, as we see it, like, let's widen this thing out a little bit. And I think we've seen some unique ways that awareness to that has, you know, has risen, you know, in the past couple of years. So I think those are good things. Mm-hmm. I'm like Pipe, you know, I don't see myself going to marches. I certainly, to me, it's not something that I'm critical of. I know people that do them, that participate in them. I'm all good with that. I think people have their own convictions about those things. It's not necessarily my thing. But I also see a value in raising that kind of awareness. I mean, in terms of what we originally were talking about, I mean, about the guy with the hat and the Native American. I mean, the story is going all over the place on what you know, what the intentions behind, you know, this kid smirking, standing, mm-hmm, you know, 4 inches in front of this Native American who was playing his drum. I mean, like, what that meant, what the motivation behind that was. And so, you know, this kid saying something different than what it looked like. What I find to be super interesting, and I would love to hear you guys riff on this for a second, mm-hmm, is at the end of the day, like, this kid, you know, at least in part of what was filmed, like, the kid didn't say anything. And it's, mm-hmm, interesting that just this smirk, like, this very irritating smirk that this kid had on his face, like, it spoke volumes, man.
Yeah, there's a phrase that goes something eating grin.
Yeah,
that is the exact description of the look on.
But do you guys find, I find that fascinating? That, again, as far as I know, there wasn't any violence.
Yeah,
there wasn't. I don't think there was any. I mean, as far as I know, I haven't seen every video, but I don't think he said anything derogatory to the Native American, whose name I forget. But yeah. At the same time, so we're really going off of a particular look, and what looked like was some kind of, you know, whatever the intention was or the motivation was behind that look. And so that, to me, is like fascinating and interesting, we're taking. And again, I would be on the side of saying, man, there was something very suspicious about all of that. So this is not me dismissing him. It's saying, like, I think it's interesting that that's kind of what we're going off of in terms of conscience right now. And I think that's interesting.
When it's absolutely even more loaded because of the hat that he was wearing 100%. And the gear that his, you know, there was several dozen students from that school, many of whom were wearing MAGA hats and other gear, and what that has become associated with in terms of the confrontational attitude, the aggression towards minorities, et cetera, like that is a filter through which you see that picture. And I think rightfully so. At least I think it's okay for that to be the first impression and go, what is going on here?
Right. It's not a hat that you wear if you're interested in, like, conciliatory language and bridge building and conversation.
Yeah, if this had somehow turned into a story of, like, this was a unifying moment between one group of people and another group of people, you wouldn't have expected those hats to be involved.
Yeah, that's right.
That's a great point.
Boys, can I?
And so
no, go ahead, Pipe.
Well, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I think to what Ronnie was saying, my understanding is that there was a lot of things being said, not by the young man who was sort of like the photograph, but things being shouted by his schoolmates. Mm-hmm. And then also there was another group of protesters there from an aggressive confrontational sect. I forget the name, but it's something like the Black Hebrew Israelites or something. And it's a very outspoken sect who are very just sort of they're divisive, they're aggressive, and they were very confrontational towards those students and sort of escalated things. So when you get like 50 high school boys and a group of protesters verbally haranguing them, things are going to get ugly. And then the Native American group came over, I think mostly to try to bring peace to the situation, from what I understood to be the case, and that's when things got out of hand. But yeah, it is strange, because not strange, it is a strange story because it is interpretive.
Yeah, for sure.
By the viewer, there are going to be those who immediately jump to, that boy is innocent, he didn't do anything.
Yeah.
Then there's going to be those who go, that boy is a, you know, he's a bigot, and, you know, he's terrible.
Sure.
And it's, you know, because it's all up to the interpretation of a picture and, you know, multiple video angles and so forth.
Yeah, let me ask you this as parents. You know, Pipe, your daughters are a little bit younger. You know, Ron, you have an adult daughter that you've raised, and I've got a 16-year-old boy living in my house. That was the age, I think, of the kid in the video. And I mean, as much as I respect sort of the journey that my 16-year-old is on, and I think he's a great dude and he's thoughtful and he's really starting to think through things, but I can tell you without qualification that I would not be ready to send him to Washington, D.C. to sort of be the symbol or the face person for anything, especially not with a pack of other high school boys who are like him. And, you know, I watch that and I go, man, I'm thankful that my kid was nowhere near that, because, you know, he's not ready. You know, he's just not ready to be in a situation where he's, you know, getting shouted down by some other people group or whatever. And I don't know. I think it's maybe an example of throwing somebody into a moment that they're not prepared for way too early.
I mean, honestly, I don't know.
Oh, exactly.
Ready.
Yeah.
I don't mean that because of any latent bigotry.
Yeah.
I hope there's not any there, but just because if you put me in the middle of three groups of people, one of whom is very contentious, one of whom is a group of adolescent boys who are dressed like people who are contentious,
right,
and one of whom is playing music and doing something that's just, it's kind of unexpected. Yep. I don't know how I would navigate that. I like to think that I would sort of try to settle everybody down, but really, who's going to listen to one voice when there are 150 people beginning to get rowdy?
That's right.
You know, I
and add to that the complexity of cameras everywhere, potentially capturing every look on your face on a continuum from, you know, soft and open-hearted to angry or smirky or whatever. Yeah, it's just, to me, a recipe for disaster, and I wouldn't want to be anywhere near it with or without my kid.
That, I mean, I think if you take a step back, though, there is, all of this is granular. If you look at this from a bigger picture, you have a group of a few dozen white, affluent boys who landed themselves in a situation that was confrontational towards minorities.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which, you know, that's a problem.
Yeah, which, by the way, none of us as parents would be proud of if that was our son right now. I would be aghast.
You know, I would be so disappointed.
Oh my gosh.
In my kids if that's how they, like, if they turned and walked away quietly and didn't confront their friends, I would say you could confront your friends. But, like, at the very least, don't be part of that.
Yeah.
At your best, try to de-escalate. Try to side with somebody who doesn't have anybody siding with them.
Yeah.
But that whole situation was, it's just, I think even the conversation we've had is indicative of where some of these things go off the rails. And you look at it and you're like, the biggest problem here is that a few dozen white kids found themselves or put themselves in a confrontational situation with non-confrontational Native Americans and created a threatening situation to a degree. Mm. That's dumb at best.
Yeah.
That's the best description you can give it. And it probably runs deeper than that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, boys, let's wrap the show with something not at all depressing, not at all like culturally divisive or current eventy. Although there's a little division between the three of us on the program, but it's the kind of division that can be interesting, and that is Leif Enger's new book, Virgil Wander, which I think we all got for Christmas or shortly before. We are fans. We're all three, I think, huge fans of Peace Like a River, which was his first novel. And his second novel was, help me with the title, Pipe. I'm not recalling it. So Brave, Young, and Handsome, which I enjoyed just sort of luxuriating in the worlds that Enger creates. But I was much less sort of captivated by that story. But then I love Virgil Wander. I got this book for Christmas. I've been devouring it. To me, it gets back to a little bit of the pathos that that Peace Like a River brought to the table. I find myself just really relating to the main character, just sort of this middle-aged guy with some ideals and trying to figure things out. Pipe, you finished the book. I assume you've loved the book, although we haven't like explicitly talked about it. What did you love about it?
You know, you said you love luxuriating in the worlds that Enger creates, and I think that's the most captivating thing about his writing. He writes characters brilliantly,
yeah.
But he writes context like it's a character.
Yeah. Yep.
So this book, Virgil Wander, takes place in a fictitious North Shore town in Minnesota. So like north of Duluth, between Duluth and like Grand Marais,
yep.
Somewhere on the Lake Superior shore, which I'm utterly biased, but it's one of my favorite areas in the world. But the town is a character.
Yep.
The geography, the culture, all of that is part of the charm of the book. So you have these wonderful characters who are written deeply and really realistically.
Yeah.
You know, he writes people in such a way that there's not sort of the white-hatted good guy and the black-hatted bad guy,
yep.
Which those can be fun books, but They're subtle, they're profound, they're thoughtful, they're deep, they're confused. They're just all of the things that humans are in all of their sort of gender and age appropriate ways. And then you get the town, and he always writes the supernatural into his books in a unique way too. And in a mysterious way, which I like. So it's not preachy. It's not like, oh, let's tie this off nicely in a bow, but he just sort of leaves an air of sort of supernatural mystery as well, which you weave all that together. And it's just sort of a sublimely profound way to write a book, I think. And he's one of the only authors who I like, living authors that I read. And I just sit back every few pages and I just shake my head and go, how does anybody do this?
Yeah, totally. I have that moment with it too, where I'm just like, I couldn't do this. And rather than feeling threatened by it, I'm just like, I'm really glad he's doing it. To me, it's the stuff that would make like Jonathan Franzen and Garrison Keillor great. I mean, they're great writers. They're really talented writers, but you know, this is sort of a way less pagan version of the stuff that they do, you know, in terms of just writing really real, often clever stories about people. I used to really love Garrison Keillor's novels. You know, he writes about the same part of the world and, you know, a lot of the same issues, just people trying to figure stuff out and trying to figure out who they are and where they fit. And, you know, it's nice to read somebody who's that freakishly talented, but yeah, who has a bit of a, you know, a perspective that would overlap a little bit more with ours in terms of, you know, how we feel about things. Big R, you started the book. You're a huge Enger fan too. You loved his first two books. But this one didn't grab you. You said you got like a third of the way through it and bailed. So talk about that, baby.
Yeah, no, I mean, so yeah, I love him. I love Peace Like a River. I love So Brave, So Handsome, whatever it was called, Less, mm-hmm. like I think most of us did.
Yeah.
But I still enjoyed it. I still really liked it. Man, I just get funny with books sometimes. Here's what's interesting. I agree with absolutely everything you guys have said about it. You said it better than I could say it, and I wouldn't say it different if I could say it how you said it.
Yeah. But
for whatever reason, I got about a third of the way in, and it may have just been things that were going on in my life at the time, you know, a couple months ago. And it just started I started reading the same paragraph over and over and over again, and I just I couldn't – yeah, you know how that goes. And like, that to me is always the sign that I either don't like this book or it's the wrong time for reading this book. So I got it right here. I'm looking at it. I mean, I would like to finish it because, man, again, you're reading the words of just like a master in terms of a storyteller and somebody who does it in such an original and creative way. If I had one criticism about it that struck me, and I make this criticism about artists and musicians many times, is that to me there were parts of it that felt like Enger trying to be too Enger. And it was like sometimes he would have a sentence where I'd go, all right, dude, you like that sounds you trying to be so you. You know, to where it's like it was a little too over the top for me, you know.
Yeah.
And again, that's kind of, you know, the way he describes things, I really like the way Piper said, like he keeps things very like relatable, and he does. And I felt like the way he described some aspects of the main character on occasion, and I'm just being really nitpicky right now. It made me kind of go, okay, come on, Enger, we get it. You like, you know how to turn a phrase when you're talking about, you know, the inner feelings of the main character and, you know, his perception on certain things. And so that was the only thing, but it's like, but that's who he is. I don't think he was, you know, I wouldn't even try to project that that's what he was doing. But, you know, I don't know. That's being nitpicky.
I think that's a really fair critique. And it's something that you can only recognize if you have deeply invested in everything else he's written. So, like, if this was the first Leif Enger book somebody read, that would mean nothing to them.
Yeah.
Because all of that would be their first encounter with those turns of phrase and those similes and those kinds of descriptions. Whereas when you've read and reread his previous books, it becomes a little noticeable. I think it's probably true for every author.
For sure.
Yeah, because the authors don't reinvent their style.
Yeah.
At least most don't.
Yeah, yeah. It's an unfair...
Because you lose something if you try
to do that. Yeah, you do. He is being who he is. And the reason why he you know, he gains the kind of following and fans and love that he does is because of who he is. And so it's not even really a criticism. It just, for some reason, being on his third book, you know, every once in a while I would come across something that it just, maybe it's because I'm too used to his writing style. So it wasn't exciting me like it originally did. But you know what? I think I'm going to return to this. I've done this before. I've done this many times, actually. I'm going to return to this book at a time when it's good, and I think I'm going to eat it up, and I'm going to just be enthralled for sure. And I don't have any doubt about that. So,
yeah.
Yeah. I suspect that if you could read it at a time when you were, you know, relaxed as opposed to, you know, wrestling through a billion other things in life or whatever was going on, it helps to just sort of sit with it, especially because of those, like the reactions that Ted and I talked about, where you just every few pages or every couple chapters, you just sort of get blown away by something. And it's a rare book that makes me, like, it kind of hits the brakes on me where I'm like, whoa,
yeah.
I'm going to reread that because I have not read anybody else who writes like that.
Totally.
But that's sort of luxurious reading pace. That's not a normal, like, cruise through a book pace.
Yeah, that's right.
What do you got, Pipe? What is his? I think I've read a couple of things about. I mean, does he have some kind of an evangelical background, or like where is he at with all that stuff?
I think he does. I don't know his bio well, but he, I think he's a professing believer.
Yeah,
and. He lives a really quiet life in northern Minnesota. He's off the radar screen. He writes a book like every 6 or 8 years. So he's not one of these, which is part of the reason they're all fantastic, because he's not cranking them out on like a book a year contract mill pace. But yeah, I think at the very least, he is a kind of a deeply spiritual, you know, person who's grown up in the church. Mm. In Peace Like a River, his first novel, that is such an obvious theme throughout. I mean, and like an outspoken theme. I had somebody ask me the other day, they were like, hey, you know, we're going through books, sort of a book club thing. What would you recommend? This group loves fiction, and I want to introduce something to them that's like not Christian fiction, because most of that's not great, but like Christian-y fiction.
Yeah.
And Peace Like a River was the first thing and the only thing that came to mind. Because I'm like, it is absolutely a Christian book, but not in any of the ways you don't want a book to be a Christian book.
Absolutely. Dude, just like subject matter wise, this book is like catnip to me. There's a middle-aged guy trying to run a movie theater in a small town. There's like a little minor league baseball angle. There's the North, the Great Lakes. It's like five things that I love all packed in.
It's romantic for you, Big T.
Dude, it's romantic. Yeah, it's romantic, man. You like to sort of think of yourself in some of those scenarios, and it's just a real like subject matter fit for me too. In certain novels, if I can't sort of get anywhere with the subject matter, I can't envision myself in any of those scenarios. It becomes hard to, you know, to really enter into it. But yeah, this is one
that's a good
point. That I've enjoyed, man, and I'm glad, you know, I'm glad he's out there and he's doing stuff. And you know, it's interesting. There's probably not much space in the marketplace for anyone else doing that. You know what I'm saying? Like, there can only be one of him. And it's kind of shocking that in the mainstream literary world, they've even let a confessing Christian in as deeply as they've let him in. You know what I'm saying? You know, because secular MFA programs, certainly English faculties, tend to be really... really standoffish when it comes to Christians, so it's kind of a shocker that he's gotten the kind of traction that he has.
Well, you never know, man. Maybe TGC will give him a plenary.
Oh, dude, a plenary? Are you kidding? That'd be amazing.
Maybe Ben Sasse and Leif Anger will get a plenary.
You know, maybe that's a plan that I may even buy a ticket for that one. I've never been to one of these Reformed confs, but you know, you may get me off the sofa for that one, baby. I may go here. Hear Leif Anger and Ben Sasse on the same plenary stage. That'd be amazing.
But guys, I thought, Pipe, help me here, man, because I can't remember. I thought somebody from our tribe interviewed him, like when this book came out. Am I making that up?
So I co-host another podcast called The Table of Malcontents. It's all about books and reading. I do it with a couple guys from work. And those guys interviewed him while I was stuck traveling for work. So I don't, I will forever hold a grudge against Aaron Armstrong and Dave Schrader because they were able to interview Leif Anger, who has long been one of my top favorite authors, while I wasn't able to be there. I think Russ Ramsey did an interview with him.
That's who I'm thinking of, I think.
So Russ is going to be, in terms of sort of the authorial world, a little bit more known. So he did one. I think that was a written interview. Maybe Anger came to an event that they held. I can't remember. But yeah, it was right around the time the book came out in maybe November. So
dude, what did those guys
Russ
say
Ramsey
about him?
Did one.
Did they say he was cool?
Oh yeah, they have nothing but good things to say. They love his books. Yeah. But then he as a guest was I guess just delightful. And then he knew that the other host, me, couldn't be there. So they printed out they found one of my old school pictures from when I was in like third grade, and they printed it out in full color, and he signed it. So he signed a picture of me for
nice.
Me, which is. So that's the sort of sense of humor that he has, if that gives anybody a hint into the sort of like offbeat hilarity of who Leif Anger.
You know what's crazy? The reviews I read when it came out, I think they were his least great reviews. I thought
that was
interesting.
Of this one, yeah. Virgil Wander?
The reviews I read, I didn't obviously read every review. The reviews I read were not like awesome. They were they were sort of 3 out of 5 star reviews. Yeah.
Dude, that's so
See, he's his own worst enemy on that front, though, because when your first novel is transcendent and your second novel is exquisite, you know, your third novel is just going to disappoint some people.
Sure.
Even if, in my opinion, it is, I think it's better than his second one and not way, way off his first.
Yeah, I agree, man. I agree.
That's a good take on it. I think it's a good take.
It is a good take.
Even as far as what I've read on it so far. Yeah.
But. Boys, can I land us on Indie Live again? And just say Please. To our listeners that if they bring third grade pictures of themselves, we will sign them. I think that's a nice motif. I kind of like that.
That is nice. So, I like that too.
Yeah. In addition to shaving, getting tattoos, getting Kenta Colvey stuff. Hopefully, I don't want to get my hopes too high on the Kenta Colvey front. But you know, we'll sign those pictures. So bring us your third grade pictures. And we will be happy to sign them. But boys, we have done what we always do on this program, in that we've wandered to and fro throughout some pretty serious topics. Not a lot of ha-has on the program today, but appreciate your thoughtfulness on those things. And until next time, Rachel the Hell Devins.
The Happy Rant is brought to you by Resonate Recordings. If you go to resonaterecordings.com, you can see the full range of services they offer. So if you're considering starting a podcast, they are the ones we recommend going with. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see their prices, to connect with them and ask any questions, and to see what they can do to help you launch, edit, master, and improve your podcast. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see what they can do to help you launch and improve your podcast.
I found myself on a ledge, 3 stories high at some condominiums, contemplating my life and struggling to understand my purpose. Have you ever found yourself on the ledge? My name is Billy Ant. I'm a caring father, mentor, and friend. In my new podcast, Billy and the Goat, I share the life-changing events that shaped who I am today to remind you that no matter how far you've fallen, God can help you get up and thrive. Listen now at lifeaudio.com.